Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Be the Right Club Today podcast. Today's episode is all about hitting bombs. Let's talk about our favorite thing in golf. The most popular topic in golf right now is speed. How do we generate speed? How do we maintain speed? How do we train for speed? How do we work on speed without messing up the rest of our games? And so for today's guests, we brought on two speed experts, Mr. Michael Romatowski, who's the founder of Mach 3 Speed Training, and Miss Sarah White's current Symetra Tour player. She led the Symetra Tour last year in driving distance at over 299 yards. She's an expert on hitting bombs. So Michael, Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you.
So let's get started, Michael. Help the audience understand what the Mach 3 speed system is.
So Mach 3 exists to answer two questions. One, how can I train for speed safely? And then two, can I use the same system to train for the entire game in terms of physical conditioning? And so fortunately, the answer to both of those questions is yes. We started about 4 years ago in San Antonio, Texas. And we do have a gym here, which we work with people individually and in groups. We've been fortunate to have a worldwide presence. And it's really a very simple system. You know, there's two reasons why people are sometimes wary of speed training. One is they think they're gonna get hurt, and one is they think they're gonna hit it sideways. So we've been able to prove that neither of those things are true if you have a good system. So Mach 3 is based on principles, not technique. So we don't teach the swing at all. We very rarely even discuss the technique of the swing. Mach 3 language is more geared towards principles. And our main principle is called speed out in front. And so what that means is we're asking the golfer to project and try to create maximum speed past the ball. And it just so happens that that's the most important key in maximizing your speed at the ball. And so the entire system is built around that principle. Then beyond that, we have a training system to train for the entire game to get in the best shape that we can. So the reason we're successful, though, is because the speed gains happen on two levels. And the foundational level is everybody's going to walk in the door with speed that they already have within them. And we're just going to show them how to find that. And so to do that, we don't have to change their body at all. Because if you had to change somebody's body to find the initial speed, you'd fail in a large number of cases. So what we're doing is showing them a concept, giving them a tool that they can practice it with immediately. And within 20, 25 minutes, historically, our numbers show they're going to find 2 to 8 miles per hour of speed, extra speed. Now, they walked in the door with that, though, and that's one reason why they're not going to get hurt, is it was already within them. Their body has that capability already. So we're not extending them initially beyond their capability. It's just a principle that if they can experience it and apply it, they're going to find speed they already have. Then the second level of speed gains is from training. So that's why we have a variety of tools and a variety of protocols, and we hold both individual sessions and group classes here so that over weeks and months, the golfer can train in our system, get in better and better shape, lay the foundation for even more speed gains. So again, what our numbers show is initially the concept alone is worth 2 to 8 miles per hour. And then the subsequent training is another 2 to 8. The average has held true at about 11.5 miles per hour of club head speed and about 13 miles per hour of ball speed,
which is about 25 yards of carry. 1 mile an hour increase is 2.5 yards.
Right. And so, you know, really what I wanted from the beginning is I knew, you know, after testing 500 golfers, I knew for sure that this system worked. And at about 5,000 golfers now, there's, you know, it's a 99.9% success rate. But what I wanted was a community of golfers who love to train this way, are chasing speed, because it is, in my mind, the distance you can hit the ball is the foundational thing that will predict your scoring potential. So it's also the most fun way to train, it's the most fun thing to do. It's a blast. And what I was looking for is a community of golfers that love this kind of training and love to keep chasing speed. And Sarah, maybe you could tell your story about how you started with Mach 3 and where it took you.
Yeah, so Mike, Mach 3 came up to Texas State where I went to school back in the fall of 2018. And you know, I was already long. I've been long my entire life. Like, I played boys ice hockey for 14 years. And when they came in, you know, I'm hitting it 275 as a 20-year-old. And not that I didn't love their stuff. I'm like, I'm maxed out. I'm 5'3". You know, I can't do much with what I have. And so when I started with Mach 3, when they came in, my top speed was 114 miles an hour, averaging about 108. And then they came back, or we came down to the gym in the spring of 19. And from there, I asked Mike and I said, hey, I really like your guys' stuff. My eligibility's up this year. I want to keep training. I'm turning pro and I'm staying in San Antonio. And Mike's like, no, we can't train you. And I was like, all right. And then he goes, you're going to work for us. So immediately after exams, I started working for Mike. And now since training and everything, I'm averaging 113 miles an hour and my top speed is 122. And my ball speed average now is 160 and my top speed is 169. So I would say I mean, as the longest hitter on tour, LPGA or Epson, like that's very crucial because distance in women's golf is a huge advantage, especially on certain courses. But, you know, I never would have guessed that would be me. Like, if you look at me, you'd be like, yeah, she's built like a brick house, but I'm 5'3". Like, what can you do with that? So it is truly something that I have loved since the beginning, and I never would have guessed the results. So everyone has untapped potential in speed, no matter how good you think you are. So, I've been working with them since I've been working for them since 2019, and I work with all of the people in our gym, and I've done a couple private clinics and college clinics and stuff like that and trained people. So it's truly incredible. I mean, we have a lot of success stories of people gaining like 25 yards.
So Hal and I went through the system with Michael and Jeff in San Antonio. Really, you hadn't been there very long, Michael, right? Like it was probably about 4 years ago. Hal, tell your experience, kind of what you felt and just experience going through their system that day in San Antonio.
Well, I was intrigued. You know, I'm an old guy now. 4 or 5 years ago, I was approaching 60 years old, and I don't remember exactly what my speed was when I went in there, maybe 103 or 4 miles an hour. I don't remember. We got it up to 107 or 8 by the time we left. You know, it was intriguing with using the ropes and the chains, and I had video of all that, and I sent that to some of my friends, and they're like, what are you doing? And, you know, I'm done with golf, but at the same time, I still want to be decent, and I'd still like to have a decent, amount of length without trying to reduce the loss on my clubs like everybody else has done. I'd really like to have true natural speed that created the distance. And I think that's what you do, isn't it, Mike?
Yes, it is. And I remember the day pretty well that you were there, because when you walked in the door, I said, oh, he's skeptical. You know, I could just tell, which is not an uncommon reaction for an elite player. So you also, and myself, because I'm about to turn 62, so we're actually in the range of the most successful group in Mach 3, which I would say is age 50 to 75, the senior golfers. And that's been the most gratifying thing, because obviously it's cool to have somebody walk in who's won 16 times on the tour and won a major, you know, somebody of your caliber. That's awesome. But I would have been just as happy to see you if you were a 22 handicap, just playing in a foursome at your club, you know? And so we have a huge contingent of those type of guys who are determined not to be the shortest one in their foursome, or who are determined to stay in contention for the senior club championship and that kind of thing. We also have a huge now female contingent of girls, high school, even middle school, high school, college, who train in our system. And they were a big motivation for me, because when I first moved to San Antonio, there were three high school girls in this town who were pretty good players and got college scholarships, and they went away. And within 2 weeks with their new team, they were already injured. And a couple of them, I don't think, even played their freshman year. So that's the kind of thing that motivated me, because I knew that this could be done safely. You know, we only have one tool out of the entire arsenal that we swing as fast as we can. And so that kind of training is probably only 5% of Mach 3. And the rest of it is sequencing and patterns and conditioning in the right patterns. So we're actually very selective about how often we go at top speed. And a lot of this is conditioning. And it's, you know, we even have an entire system for quote unquote balancing the body and injury prevention, that kind of thing. So what I've been the happiest about is how, like, guys your age and my age are really successful in this system, as well as all the other age groups and the levels of competitors. And even, you know, the biggest surprise really was the world long drive guys, because I'm not from that background at all. You know, I'm not a long drive professional or person. And so when we had our first long drive guy come in, I was kind of curious and even nervous a little bit, like, wow, this guy's so fast already. Will the same system work for him? But it does, you know. So we've had 6 world long drive champions at our workshops or visiting for a day or two, and they all went up the same amount, basically the same average. And so when you see, okay, the system works for everyone, and we don't even need, like, okay, here's Mach 3 for kids, and then there's Mach 3 for ladies, and then here's Mach 3 for seniors. It's all the same system. And they can even train side by side, the same workout, because each golfer will project whatever intensity they're capable of, but they're not going to be extended beyond what they're capable of.
I will say, like, per group, like kids, ladies, you know, strongest golfers, all of that, we size up and size down all of our tools. So, like, yes, it's the same workout. We'll do 6 to 8 reps of whatever tool, but you might need to tweak it a little depending on the person. So we have that capability, but it is all the same protocols and all the same workouts.
Right. And Hal, I remember when you came in, you had some physical issues, I think knee issues maybe, and possibly hip or whatever. So in my situation, okay, here comes a very elite player walking in the door. The system has to be aligned to not hurt you. I mean, that's the number one thing, is don't hurt someone. And so it's been very carefully constructed so that that doesn't happen. And, you know, we've never asked anyone to swing harder. It's not about that at all. It's the difference in swinging harder or letting yourself be effortlessly faster. And so when you're applying the concept of speed out in front correctly, it actually feels like less effort. It feels like you're not trying as hard. But that's part of the built-in safety mechanism, where, again, you can't ask a golfer to do more physically than they're capable of. So when you walked in the door, Hal, the last thing that was ever going to happen is we were going to say, hey, jump up on this 4-foot high box, or hey, or run sprints with this parachute attached to your waist. Or, you know, it's not that kind of training. And basically, when you understand speed out in front, it feels like you're not trying as hard, and it feels good. And one thing that we're really big on is we train to feel better. We don't train to be tired. We don't train to be exhausted. We train to feel better, not worse. And that's a big part of it, because we're just looking for your best performance. And that's not going to happen if you're exhausted. And it's certainly not going to happen if you're injured.
Well, one of the things that I like best about your system is all my life I knew that when I was hitting it best, maximum speed was either at impact or just after impact. The effort comes from trying to get the speed right out of the transition. And that's mm-hmm. where we all fail. And I'm going to say this pretty unequivocally, that all golfers are trying too hard out of transition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they learn anything when they go see you about the Mach 3 system, they will learn that that is counterproductive to a long ball.
Yeah, it's the killer. It's the speed killer. So when we have our faster golfers in the gym and, you know, and we're measuring, a lot of times we ask them, what do your fastest swings feel like? And they'll say, like I wasn't even trying, or it felt effortless. And when you say, what do your slowest swings feel like? They have the same answer every time. They say, I tried too hard too soon. And so if you think about, we'll call it the swing arc, you'll maximize your speed about 4 to 5 to 6 feet along that arc sooner than you're trying to. So if you're trying to do it at the ball, it'll probably happen in transition. So we just move that point well out in front and upward, and therefore it happens approximately at the ball. And it's not exact. We're not looking for exact motions. We're looking for a general feeling and a general pattern, and for you to be able to sense the motion as a whole and not try to intellectualize the parts, because that's the other speed killer. You try to intellectualize the parts, it's a huge distraction and it takes away from your speed. So it's a total feel-based system. It's a sensation. And again, it's actually much easier. It's much easier to train and perform that way, because there's really not much to think about, if anything at all. Once you understand speed out in front, you know what it feels like. That's all there is to it. And so on our end, and Sarah will verify this, I'm sure. And by the way, she is a fantastic Mach 3 instructor. She really grew into that role. We don't talk about the swing. So if you ask Sarah in a class, well, what about this? What about that? She's not going to answer you. She's going to tell you to shut up and give her more speed out in front.
A little bit meaner. I'll be like, you think I have the brain capacity to think about what you need in your golf swing? But I don't really care. It's the perfect thing about Mach 3. And what I absolutely love is the tool is going to give you the feedback, especially with the long rope tools. or the heavier, clunkier tools, if you swing it incorrectly, you will know. So if someone comes in and they're swinging the rope and it's a good pattern, it's not smacking, it's not, you know, doing all the things that we don't want to see, and they're saying like, well, what do you think about this? And I'm like, dude, you need to shut up. Like, you need to and I was like, I promise you, I will tell you if you're doing it wrong. I'm not afraid to tell you that. So it kind of gets rid of all of these people doing perfect positions. They're doing this, they're doing that. And, you know, it's truly incredible to see, you know, everyone has a different golf swing, but the way they swing the rope is going to be perfect for them. That's the best part about it.
Michael, why ropes versus like speed sticks?
So, well, we have two tools that are swinging tools, a jet stick and a speed bomber, and those can be swung anywhere. The tools that have the long ropes, that is essentially for feedback, because what you're looking for is to be able to project the rope out a good distance with not trying harder, but efficient body movement. And so it's kind of cool because whether you're doing it yourself or you're watching someone else, you can see the more efficient the movement, the further the rope flies and the more symmetrical it is, the more symmetrical the arc as it billows out in front of them. Whereas if their body movement is inefficient, the rope will collapse or it'll have squiggles in it, or it'll even kind of knot itself up, you know? So it tells you a lot. Now, the other thing about the rope, probably the true beauty of it, is that the rope never travels exactly the same way every time. And I actually proved that to myself by looking at videos kind of frame by frame from repetition to repetition, because I kind of thought it was true, but I wanted to see for sure. The rope is never exactly in the same positions each time. And that's a really good thing, because it introduces an element of randomness and of unpredictability. So the golfer is creating the motion, but simultaneously they're reacting to the motion because it's not always exactly the same. So if you're in the gym and you're using a machine on a fixed track, pretty much every repetition is exactly the same. Well, your central nervous system can process that in no time. It's not a challenge. But if you have a rope flying back, you know, you're flinging it out, pulling it back, flinging it out, pulling it back, and it's always a little bit different every time, then you're very reactive to it. And that's what an athlete is reactive. So that's mainly why we use the ropes. The third reason is it adds a conditioning element, because it's what you call an oscillating variable resistance. And it's, again, a little bit unpredictable, but especially your core muscles and even your forearm, wrist, and hands, and really everything is being conditioned that way.
That's why Mike is the creator and I just teach it, because I could have literally never even said those words. I know how to teach people.
So here's an interesting thing about Sarah. First of all, she's a very physical person, a physical golfer, but she's a workout animal. So Mach 3 was right in her wheelhouse. But she is probably the most non-technical, really good golfer I've ever seen. She really doesn't have any swing thoughts. She's just making her motion, which I would describe as a walloping uppercut. Okay, her driver swing, you would not want to be hit with that uppercut. If you remember the old game Rock'em Sock'em Robots, where you get hit with the uppercut, your head flies up, that's what would happen. So that's her particular swing. It's not like we would try to teach Sarah's swing to anyone else, or we would try to modify her swing in any way. It is what it is, and it hits the ball over 300 yards. But she's perfect for Mach 3, because Mach 3 is non-technical and she is non-technical. Occasionally, you'll have a golfer who's very technical. Now, sometimes you want to criticize that, but it's not really something that should be criticized, because that, to a certain percentage of golfers, enhances their experience of the game. It enlivens their experience. It makes them enjoy golf more and enables them to enjoy it more to study the swing. I'm not that way, and I don't identify with it easily, but I have friends who are that way, and I can see that it's part of why they love golf. So you don't want to take that away from them, but we will take it away from them in a Mach 3 class or in a Mach 3 training session, because we're not going to talk about it. You know, we're measuring two things, clubhead speed and ball speed. We have had on occasion TrackMan in there during a workout where the coach is looking at the screen, but we don't let the golfer see anything, any of those other numbers. We're intrigued by the fact that impact alignments get better the faster you swing. I think that's cool and it's really interesting. But you don't want the golfer looking at that while they're training for speed, because it's a huge distraction and it will derail them in a heartbeat. So the only number the golfer gets to know is club head and ball speed. The other stuff you could look at yourself if you want, but you don't want them to be thinking about that while they're training. You know, rule number one of speed training, don't mix your goals. You want speed, train for speed until you get the speed you want. Then worry about the other stuff. And hopefully, you know, what we do is we measure speed in every single workout, all the time, because it enables us to compete with ourselves and with each other and always sort of stay focused on, hey, this is how I train for the whole game. This is my way of training for golf. And it's just a lot better if you don't introduce other concepts or other data points in the process. It will derail the speed gains pretty quickly.
Yeah, and so with a lot of the golfers in our classes, once the initial thrill of the speed gain has subsided, you know, I'm always gonna say, look, let me tell you when you're gonna be glad that you did Mach 3 training. When you're standing with 1 foot in the bunker and 1 foot out, or the ball is buried under the lip, or you're hitting out of 6-inch rough, or you've got branches in your backswing, that's when you're going to be glad you did this, because you're going to be stronger and more stable and have more speed than you used to, and you'll be able to hit those shots. And that's what I mean when I say this is how we train for the whole game. And that's not just elite players. I mean, the worse the player, probably the more they actually have those shots. You know, I mean, bad players are going to be trying to mash it out of the woods more often than you are. So that's exactly what I mean. What you just said, speed is fun and it's cool. And it's what draws people to Mach 3. But down the road, you're going to be happy you did it because of those awkward stances and awkward lies and places where you can't use your normal swing.
Michael, one of the things that you guys mentioned to us from a couple schools we've done together, and even Hal and I going over there, is that speed is a mindset. What do you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you can't be afraid of it. You have to realize that this is a general statement. All the best players, whether it was from the 1960s or 80s or now, they have more speed than you do if you're an average golfer. They are faster than you. And you can't be afraid of it, and you can't think, well, the faster I swing, the more sideways I'm going to hit it, because all sports motions are actually more efficient at higher speeds. So speed equals efficiency, efficiency equals speed. It's something that you should be pursuing. And it's not just the Brysons of the world who are the longest hitters, but it's been shown pretty clearly what 20 extra yards is worth to a 90 shooter. And it's worth actually more strokes per round to a 90 shooter than to a tour player. So it is a mindset, and you have to not put the shackles on yourself and not be afraid. Just say, look, all the best players are faster than me, so I'd like to have a little bit of that. And
I think that, again, when I come to the senior golfers that come in, because look, they were always the ones who were told, don't bother. You're too old. You can't do it. It won't be good for your game. Don't train for speed. Hit 100 3-foot putts every night before you walk off the putting green. And, you know, stretch or stuff like that. So to them, this is a whole new world. Okay, they come in our gym, they go up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles an hour. Wow, I did that and I'm not hurt. So this is good. I'm coming back. And I think that it's not rocket science, and it's not a mystery, and it's not smoke and mirrors. Maybe in the past, the message was gaining speed is a difficult thing to do, but it's not. It's actually easy. So if I contributed anything maybe to the equation, it's to show, look, it's not hard. It's easy. And you can do it. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're not in great shape yet. You have speed. You're not accessing it. It's worth approximately 2.5 yards per mile per hour. So there you go. If you can get up 10 miles an hour, there's 25 yards. Wouldn't you rather be hitting a 9-iron than a 6-iron or a 7-iron? Because guess what? Nobody plays better from further back. You might say you do, you know, to protect your own ego or whatever, to cover the fact that you don't want to train for speed. You might say things like, well, I'm better from 140 yards than I am from 60. No, you're not. Nobody is. Yeah,
the math backs that up.
Yeah. A lot of things have been proven that sort of take away the arguments against speed, I believe.
So, Michael, if Chase is 37 and I'm 63, we both show up. I kind of know the answer to this, but the rest of the world doesn't know the answer to this. Are you going to tailor the system differently for me versus Chase because of our difference in age or what?
Well, you actually could work out side by side doing the same general protocol. Now, things that might happen are each tool can be scaled up or down in weight and in the heft of it. So it's possible that Chase may use certain tools that are heavier than the ones that are in your hands. But also, you're each going to give what you can give. And within the system, which is designed not to make you tired, remember that. Okay, so let's say the two of you are working out side by side, and Sarah and I are the instructors. Our goal is that you not be tired. So right away, that puts you both in a situation where you can thrive in the same room at the same time. Because let's say that Chase is an Olympic caliber athlete, okay? We can't say, okay, Hal, just keep up with him. You keep up with Chase, no matter what. It's not gonna happen.
I gave that up a long time ago.
Yeah, so Mach 3 workout, I remember this one day very, very clearly. The first long drive professional that came in our gym was Tyler Barton. And he's about probably 6'1", 230, built like a NFL strong safety, all muscle. And he was training alongside a little scrawny kid who played the violin in his, I don't know, his high school band or something, right? So they're working out side by side. Now, Tyler can generate so much intensity within a 6-second set that he's going to be extremely winded for a few seconds when the set is over with. So he's kind of hands on his knees, breathing hard, right? The kid never broke a sweat in the whole workout. Doing the same workout, but he's not capable of generating that kind of intensity. So he's smiling, he's looking at Tyler like, what's up with you, man? Come on, you know? Tyler gets winded with each set, even though it's only lasting 6 seconds, but recovers very quickly. And the net effect is, the workout's over, he feels great, he's not exhausted by any means. But the kid who can't generate that kind of intensity, he's smiling and the whole thing to him is a breeze. So the answer is you can put 10 senior guys in the same class, age ranging 50 to 80. They'll all be fine, you know, because they're going to give what they can give. We're protecting their fatigue level. We're trying to make them feel good, not bad. And they can all apply the same principles, and it works just fine.
Michael, one thing that your system goes through that I really like is a dynamic warm-up. Talk mm-hmm. a little bit about, I think we as golfers, I even think how would it met back in the day, like there was very little warm-up. You hit 10 or 15 shots and you're ready to go, right? Mm-hmm. Slam the trunk and head to the first tee type thing. Talk about the importance of a dynamic warm-up and just some takeaways maybe that our listeners at home that haven't seen your system or don't have access in close proximity to your system that they can do before they go play.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting part about living in San Antonio is most of the city courses do not have driving ranges. And we so happen to belong to a private club now, but before that we were pretty much playing the city courses all the time. We would actually go to our gym on the way to the golf course to warm up with our own tools. And so then if you see us pull into the parking lot, it would look like, oh, the guy just got out of his car and went to the first tee. But actually we had already warmed up in the gym. So we have several ways to do it. There's a system called Rotex Motion, which is a system of balancing the body and enhancing mobility and stability. And that system uses devices that are in our gym. But one of them, which is a handheld device, you could actually take to the golf course and use it beforehand. So that's one thing. But mainly we have a jet stick usually and or a speed bomber in our golf bag. So that when we do get to the course, we can swing those before we tee off because the pattern is perfect. We can practice speed out in front and we can get warmed up. So an interesting thing, going back to what you were talking about earlier about short game, what we find is our golfers actually spend more time on short game now because they hit less golf balls. So in working with our tools, the need to hit so many balls is kind of diminished. Therefore, more of your time can actually go to short game. And that was not something that I realized would happen ahead of time. But over time, I was like, wow, like with myself, you know, if I hit 30 balls in a week, that's a lot, but I will practice my short game an hour a day. It's in the past, yeah, in the past, no way that would happen ever. Go ahead, Sarah.
So I travel with a speed bomber, a jet stick, and a rope tool. And I try and work out as best I can, no matter if I look stupid in a hotel parking lot or my host family scratching their head, like, what is she doing in her front yard? Like, when you see, especially out on tour, I mean, you see range rats. Like, girls are out there 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. just hitting balls on the range. They're hitting hundreds and hundreds of golf balls. I mean, that's got to be exhausting. I do not envy that. You know, I can't be a range rat anymore. One, I'm not very technical. So if I'm hitting it well, I'm going to go hit balls. I'm like, I'm good. And I go, and then I go chip and putt. And it's so crucial, especially like tour players. I mean, you get it. You have to rest. You have to have the key to your success is rest. It's finding that balance. And I love Mach 3 for that because I don't have to go to the range and sit there for 3 hours and hit 300 golf balls. I cannot do that. I would be so bored out of my mind hitting the same golf shots over and over and over again. So that's probably my favorite thing about it as well, is because it gives me ample time to, you know, I hit balls for 40 minutes when I'm hitting it well, I mean, max, and I feel good. And then I'm like, well, I can go chip and putt. I can get the green speeds. I can get, you know, how my ball is going to react on the green, blah, blah, blah. And I have 3 more hours of rest versus the other girl that's out there hitting 350 golf balls, trying to find something that works.
So here's kind of a follow-up, and this is something that Hal said, and Hal, I'd like your take on this too. What do you guys say to the people? And we've got plenty of students that come in here wanting speed, and we go through different things. We use some of you guys' stuff and use kind of a host of things to kind of help them gain speed. But there's been plenty of people that have chased speed over the last 10, 15, 50 years that have kind of played their way off of the tour or have completely changed their motion in a way where they can't manage it. Hal, would like your thoughts on this and Michael too. Like, what do you say? Like, how, you know, cause you know, you mentioned Sarah's swing as an uppercut. A lot of people that go through some of these excess speed things, like you look at a lot of the long drive guys and they're not great with wedges. They can't hit a pitch shot off a tight lie. Like, where's the balance? Obviously, you know, in Hal's era, it was control the golf ball and hit really good quality iron shots. And now it's full send, rip it. You know, do you guys have any concern or where's the balance with some of these guys that play their way right off a tour chasing speed?
I'll let Hal go first.
Well, I chase speed myself. You know, I wanted to be longer, and I know that it can, if used correctly, can reduce your scores. You can get to par fives and two that you couldn't normally get to. You can hit a shorter club into a green. But I did see people lose control of the club. They lose control of the face. You know, when their body goes fast and their arms don't stay up with their body. That's a formula for a shot that's missed to the right. You get tired of missing it to the right like that, you slow the body down, the arms get faster, then you miss it left. And, you know, that has nothing to do with your system, and I know that. But that's an individual effort to get faster. And it just about drove me off the tour in 92 and 93. And, you know, I was known as a very straight ball hitter, and all of a sudden I couldn't hit it in a 10-acre field. And, you know, let me tell you, that does something to your psyche when that starts happening. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had to get things back under control. I had to be aware of where that face was at. And so I slowed everything back down. Nick Price became a really good friend of mine. We played together a lot. And he used to say, Hal, why don't you swing at it hard? It looked like you're swinging in slow motion. I said, well, I thought I swung at it as hard as I could.
But I guess compared to his apparent speed, when you watch him, everybody probably looks slow. Yeah,
that's true. But, you know, I love your system because you're chasing speed the correct way. Most people don't understand how to chase speed. So I don't know if I answered your question there, Chase, at all, but, you know, speed, when we came to you, it was a little scary for me. Mm-hmm. So you read me right when I came in there, because the time that I did chase speed, I got worse, not better. Mm-hmm. And what I learned once I went to you, that I was chasing it the wrong way. And I'm sure a lot of people do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can encapsulate this in one sentence. This is not about swinging harder. If you try to swing harder, who knows where that face is going to be pointing? If you increase your speed through efficiency, you should hit it straighter, and you will hit it straighter. And what I always kind of say as a joke in the workshops, if people are really worried about it, I say, look, the absolute worst case scenario is you're not going to be any more crooked than whatever you are now. But efficiency is the key. That's what we're doing. So if you have the jet stick training tool, let's say, everybody, because a favorite thing that I do when somebody comes in, as they're hitting their initial balls, I'll take a face on video of one of their shots. And then when they're learning the jet stick drills, I'll take a face on video of that. And I can do screenshots. Every single golfer I've ever done that for in the jet stick sequence looks like a tour player. it's always better than their real swing. And tour players look like better tour players. Even they, the jet stick sequencing is better than their real swing. And that comes from the fact that we're saying, look, all I need you to do is make the sound of this tool, that swishing sound, out in front. Speed out in front is what does it. Speed out in front is what improves your mechanics. Because a motion like a golf swing, which is a purposeful motion, is driven by its destination. The destination is where? It's forward of you and out in front and a little bit upward. So the whole move you're making is oriented to that point. And that creates better mechanics. Because why? It eliminates all the weird things that golfers do when they're orienting their movements toward the ball. It's a huge difference. So what you see when you film somebody using a jet stick or even a speed bomber or even a Velociraptor, any of those tools, what you see technically is they load their body in a manner and they transition in a manner that is oriented to the end of the swing, not the ball. And that takes away the weird moves. So if you know, in our gym now, we have kind of an American flag thing on the wall and we use that to represent that's the direction of speed out in front. Okay, we're aiming at that with our energy, so to speak. If that's the first thing you show me, let's say I'm a brand new golfer. The first thing you show me is speed out in front and orient everything to the finish. Would I ever in a million years come wheeling over the top, steep? No. Would I ever stand up and go floating away like a hot air balloon in my backswing? No. Would I ever snatch the club way inside? No. Why? Those don't match up to a forward upward destination, because you asked me to go to the finish. You didn't mention the ball. You didn't mention impact, because to us, the ball is nothing. Impact is nothing. It's a place approximately halfway to the finish. But you asked me to go to the finish with everything I have, with my focus, my energy, my strength, and my speed. Every move I make is going to be geared toward that. And that's efficiency. And so that's how I'm going to get faster. But that's actually how my swing technically will be better without you even having to teach me that. And believe me, we don't want to go into the swing. I'm so happy that that's not part of Mach 3, because that's a harder way to go in terms of just body movement, right? So you're showing me where to go. And you're telling me I don't have to swing harder. I just have to let it happen. And so again, all the wasted motion and the strange moves, they won't match those moves that are the classic flaws over decades of the golf swing. Over the top steep is about as classic of a quote unquote flaw as you could get, right? Wouldn't happen in a million years with a brand new golfer. If they were told you're going for the finish, not the ball.
Yeah, the anticipation of impact has ruined so many golf swings. It's similar to what we try and do in here. Take the ball out of the way and you know, make whether it's about a ball or whatever it is.
I mean, the intuitive move of every new kid is to raise up away from the ground in the backswing, right? And then come wheeling down or chopping down in some fashion. But of course, because the ball's on the ground, the ball's down, so they go up and then down. But if we take that focal point and move it out in front, they're just gonna go straight for that, like a shot putter or a discus thrower, right? They never for a single moment look like they're gonna throw the implement into the ground. Right. They're going for the exit point all the time. And the golf swing's actually the same, right? So you can't say, okay, my energy is gonna go up and then down and then up again. It's only up. You gotta know where the exit point is and just go for that. And that's efficiency. And that's, again, efficiency equals speed, but efficiency also equals accuracy. It's the main component of accuracy. So fortunately, almost everybody in Mach 3 is going to come back and say, you know what, I'm actually hitting it straighter. And we go, yeah, because you're more efficient.
So you guys have mentioned a bunch of tools for our listeners at home that don't have access to a certified Mach 3 instructor, or they're not close to San Antonio. What would you recommend for, and don't have a ton of space. One of the limitations, like I've chatted with you quite a bit, Michael, about our, we don't have space for ropes. So what would you recommend for people wanting to get into your system? Obviously, you know, tell them the website, all that stuff, but people wanting to get into your system that don't have space, and what tools would you start them with?
Mm-hmm. The website is Mach3speedtraining.com. And there are two tools that can be swung anywhere. One is called a jet stick. That's a pure speed tool. One is called a speed bomber, which ironically I would call strength along the entire arc. So a jet stick and a speed bomber, those are where anybody could start, no matter, all you need is whatever space in which you could swing your driver. That's where I would start. And for anyone who purchases from our website, we send them instructional videos with all the drills and a PDF with sample workouts. And they can also, if they need to, they can email me, text me, schedule a Zoom session, anything for whatever kind of help they need. But the main thing is, you know, to say to yourself, okay, look, here's a way that I can get faster and therefore longer, but also get in shape for the game at the same time. So now I don't need, okay, over there is my 45 minute strength workout, and then over there is my 45 minute mobility workout, and then over there is my 90 minutes of swing training, right? It can all happen at the same time, and that saves time. And again, it's just so odd, because I've had instructors say to me, well, everybody needs to spend more time on the short game. They do, because they have the time now, right? Like all this other stuff is happening simultaneously. Now you've got 23 hours of the day to practice short game if you want to. Speed training's only really, say, 45 minutes three times a week. That's it.
Good stuff. Hal, any final thoughts?
Well, you know, it's been a refresher for me listening to you. We spent an interesting morning there and then had lunch with you, I remember. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I expect everybody that checks Mach 3 speed training out will learn quite a bit as well. So thanks for being on, Michael. You too, Sarah. Good luck this year, Sarah.
Thank you.
Michael, appreciate thanks again. It. You guys, everybody at home listening, check out Mach3speedtraining.com. Buy some of their tools. Come see them in San Antonio. Find a Mach 3 certified instructor. And thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Be the right club today. Yes!